Hi, this is Foster Brown, the co-host of the program. Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Cal Carson in studio for yet another hour of answering your questions at 800-859-0957. We're going to come back shortly, and we'll be having Don from Clinton Township with us and Mark from Monroe. But hey, that leaves room for you from wherever you may be calling us. 800-859-0957. Experienced techs in studio waiting to answer your question here for an hour on the Internet Advisor. All right, a question for the esteemed techs who are in here.
We're not that steamed right now. Esteemed.
Esteemed, yes. What are the top five industries impacted by drones? I'll just leave it as a question out there. The top five industries impacted by drones, and they're having bigger impact all the time. All right, we've got folks waiting right now to have a conversation with us. They've got some problems or concerns they want to talk with us about, and let's go right out to Don and Clinton Township. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, and thank you for your patience.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you today?
Very good, sir. Happy good Valentine's Day here. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to thank you for some of your suggestions on programs like Combo Fix, et cetera, that have helped you immensely without spending any money. They've worked marvelously for me on my machine.
Good.
Glad to hear that. Thank you.
Are you guys up for a question regarding a multifunction copier on a network?
Sure.
Absolutely.
I have a Xerox WorkCenter 5150 copier that one of the features it has is a scanning ability. Mm-hmm. And when we go to scan, it worked fine. It was set up. It worked fine. We go to scan now, and it scans. It feeds the paper. It does all that. But when it goes to scan, we get an error message that says unable to connect the server.
Yeah,
I tried to check the IP addresses and all that. It seems to be proper, and I just can't figure out why I keep getting that, all of a sudden get that error message.
If I remember the Xerox multifunctional units, there's two ways you can set them up. You could set them up to connect to a SMTP mail server, so they actually have their own user ID and mail account that they send from the Xerox printer to a mail account, so that at that point, the scan is emailed internally to someone in the organization. The other way that it can be done is you can install Xerox software onto a workstation that's on the same network that discovers the Xerox printer. And there's a relationship or a pairing that takes place between the workstation and the Xerox multifunctional printer. And I thought that the setup on that was initiated from the workstation that you install. Was it WorkCenter, I think?
Yeah, yes, sir. I think you hit something right on the head. We have it set up as a SMTP, which is how the tech set it up. Not a Xerox tech, but the installation tech.
Right.
And I wasn't aware of that second comment you made regarding the Xerox software.
Yeah, well, there's two ways of setting it up.
And the best way, I think, is through SMTP, the Simple Mail Transfer Protocol.
Right.
Oh,
so what?
It is?
Yes, that would be the best way.
Well, that's one way of setting up. So inside small organizations that have their own mail server on site, or if your network has access to the internet. So, I mean, just a user ID and password change on the user account, if it's set up as an SMTP server, or the account was disabled by the mail server admins because they go, "What is this? I keep on sending email addresses to this user account. I never get a response. I'm disabling it," because they forgot that they set up a print server scanner mailbox for your multifunctional printer. So it really depends how you have it set up, and that's what you need to identify first.
Okay. Very good. Oh, that's excellent. Can I ask one other quick one?
You know, we got a bunch of people in line.
No.
That's quite all right. Well, now, here, Don, what I want you to do is go to our site, internetadvisor.net, and click on the Contact Us button and send us an email and reference the fact that you were on the air with us, okay?
Well, we could probably hang on.
All right. Thank you so much, Don, for that. I want to make sure we get to a lot of the other people who have been waiting for quite a while here. And Mark, thank you for your patience. From Monroe, glad to have you here on the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Hello.
Hi.
I'm having a problem with my laptop.
Yes.
It went into reconfiguration mode, and from then on, I cannot get Wi-Fi. I cannot get onto the internet at all.
So when you say first, what type of operating system are you running? Windows XP, Windows 7, Windows
Vista?
Vista. So when you power up, what was the splash screen you got on your laptop?
Windows.
Okay.
Windows what, please? I'm sorry?
Oh, I don't. To be honest with you, I don't know.
Okay. How old is the machine?
5 years.
Okay. Well, it's not that bad. So it's probably Windows 7.
Are you near the computer? Is it turned on?
Yeah, it's turned on.
Okay. So when you say reconfiguring, is that like when you power up the computer, it says it's reconfiguring? Or when you're in the computer and you're trying to attach the network? I mean, when does this message pop up?
Yeah, I was already on the internet, and it said it's going to shut down and reconfigure.
Got you. Okay, So more than likely what's happened, well, I'm speculating at this point, that there might have been a Microsoft security update or a patch that was installed, and... But usually those do not force reboots right away. They usually wait to the reboot. So
since he's got the computer turned on, can he do a right mouse click on my computer and tell you what operating system he's using right now?
Sure.
Okay, why don't you do that? Can you do that easily, Mark?
Yep.
Okay, so and then after the part where it says reconfiguring, did the computer successfully shut down and restart at that point?
Matter of fact, that's where all the problems started. Okay. It wouldn't turn back on.
Okay, so you're sitting, so it didn't turn on now, but are you in front of the computer, and is it powering up now?
Yeah, we had to take the battery out, and now we're able to actually get it somewhat on,
okay.
But it won't get on the web, the internet.
All right, here's what we're going to do, Mark. We're going to put you on hold, and then during the break, what we're going to do is Ed's going to step aside and talk with you. And when we come back, we'll share some of the things that Ed and Mark talked about during the break. This is in order to be able to get as many of you folks on the air to answer your questions. 800-859-0957. Jason from Rochester Hills will be talking to you in just a moment. Thank you again so much for joining us now in our third hour today. And we are dedicating these last 2 hours to answering your questions. And by the way, you may have heard me, when we get to questions that seem a little bit complicated or involved, we answer as much as we can on the air right now and then hope that the people will call us back by going to internetadvisor.net and putting a question in there on the Contact Us button. And then throughout the week, Ed and Cal and some of the rest of us will grab those things and do our best to answer them for you. I want to thank the guys behind the glass, Masters Dorsch, who is handling the phone calls. Thank you very much, Mike Stetz. And also Rich Lozinski, who's been handling us in the last hour as well. Our engineers making everything happen. Cal.
Hey, tomorrow, February 15th. Good time. The Mac Group is having their monthly meeting. And this meeting, our subject matter will be reduce, reuse, recycle your computer equipment. And we're going to talk about all sorts of different ways you can repurpose that particular piece of computer equipment you may have. It doesn't just have to be a Mac. It could be anything, be a printer or whatever, that sort of thing. So
excellent.
Folks might want to come out to that. They can link to the Mac Group website through internetadvisor.net. And in addition to that, it's a great thing to do. You know, recycling is terrific. Matter of fact, I just saw Steve Beck.
Steve Beck?
Is it not Steve Beck? He's with Global Tech Ministries.
Yeah, Steve Beck, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I saw him a couple of weeks ago, dropped off some equipment to him, and he's doing just great.
Yes, he is. Longtime friend of ours, Steve Beck, at Global Tech Ministries, and he's got, a laundry list that we posted on our Facebook page. By the way, we have a Facebook page, and simply go to Internet Advisor on Facebook and look us up there.
And if anybody ever wants to get rid of computer equipment, he's a great guy to get in contact with, and he is a 501c3 organization, so you can get that tax deduction if you need it.
And he did great.
And the Mac Group is one of the oldest in the country.
Right. And what's nice about that, a lot of people that want to get rid of equipment, they're always concerned about their data. And so Steve will talk to you about that. You know, he'll say, don't worry. You know, I will erase your data.
He does. He does a great job of that. He has helped schools in Africa and in the United States and places that would never be able to have computer access. But your older machine sometimes is a gift from heaven for some of these folks who have had no kind of computer systems at all. And he's able to refurb them very well. Before we go to Jason from Rochester Hills, with your conversation, you were talking with, I believe, Mark from Monroe. Did you get anything further, Eddie, offline?
No, but I'm probably going to have them, if you want to get Mark back in, have them call their internet service provider, if possible. Because what's happening is that his home computer sees the different wireless networks. He sees Netgear. He sees and other ones. He's just not connecting to the internet at this point. Mm. So he might want to go to the back of his not only his Netgear wireless router and hit the reset button, but then go back to his cable modem and hit the reset button on the back of that thing.
Yes.
And sometimes he has to call the cable company, and it's an automated system to automatically just ping it. And it'll establish the connection sometimes.
And they can initiate a reset as well.
I did that recently with Comcast when I was having some problems. I went to them and she said, "Mr. Brown, hang on a second while I reset this." And boom, it's reset from there.
And that's why, Mark, if you're still listening, I'm sure you are. I told him we'd get him back on the air, but we want to get Jason right now.
Right.
That call your internet service provider, but you might want to reset your cable modem before you call them.
Because they're going to ask you to do that.
Because it sounds like Windows is working. It's just as he says. He's lost internet access.
And the process.
And he lost its connection.
The process usually is to shut it down. At least the process was, you shut down your computer, then you shut down the modem, then you shut down the cable modem. And then when you put it back on.
First,
you mean
a
router, pardon me.
PC, router, and then the cable modem.
Yep. Right. And then you put them back on by starting at the wall.
Right.
And you start with your cable modem, then to your router, then to your PC. That's how they come back on. Okay, let's get to this. By the way, 800-859-0957 is our number. And Jason from Rochester Hills, thank you for waiting patiently. Happy Valentine's Day, and welcome to the Internet Advisor.
To you as well. Yes, I have the Lenovo Y500 laptop, and we're running Windows 8.1. And for some reason, when I shut the lid, the power totally shuts off, and also when I go to change the power to shut down normally, it doesn't go through the proper process to shut down. It actually stays on for like 20 minutes, and then it just drops power.
Have you tried in Windows 8.1 to go into the search, or just from your Windows modern interface, and just type in power settings? And as soon as you start typing, it'll bring up your the Windows search capability. And what you probably want to modify, or at least look at the existing settings for, you know, power settings. What to do when I shut the lid? You want to go to sleep is what you should be instead of powering off. Have you tried that yet, Jason?
Yes, I'm actually in power off. Would it be under the power option?
Yeah, probably, yes.
I'm in the advanced setting right now, and I've looked at it. I've also done all the virus scans and everything, but I did have a failed update with a Windows update like 2 months ago, and then a month later I also have this issue, but I have forced update with Windows, and it says I'm up to date with my updates.
Okay, so how long has this problem been happening since day
one?
For
probably about the last month. I'm trying not to do a reinstall designate if it's a software issue or a hardware. Mm-hmm. If it's hardware, I do have options, but I kind of want to rule out software.
Who makes the computer? What's the manufacturer?
Lenovo.
You might want to consider going to Lenovo's website and see if there's any patches or anything firmware updates that you can download from their website. Something may have changed that may require a firmware update because the operating system may have changed.
Well, you know, that Cal brings up a good point, and it wouldn't be firmware. What you're looking for, as he said, Microsoft may have applied a patch or a software update on your computer, and it may have changed a file by Lenovo. So you might want to go and search for your model number and then download the software for Windows 8.1 for your laptop for, you know, system files and check and BIOS update. And what else would it be? Power settings and advanced chipset.
Any number of things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sound.
You should be able to just to enter your model number and it will tell you what the updates were, right?
Yeah, and there may not even be an update. It just may say drivers for,
there you go,
you know, software installation for, you know, this particular model. It's quite possible that a setting changed after either a maintenance update by Microsoft or failed maintenance update. And that might take it. But it sounds like you're in the right area. Now, did you find the area that I was referring to about lid closure and power button options?
I see the one with the sleep settings. I'm in the advanced setting on the power options.
Yep, and it's called, you know, what to do.
I don't see something called lid. I don't see anything that says lid.
Yeah, it's a...
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, just down from the power button turn on password protection. If you say it shows power button and lid settings.
Okay, I see it right here. It says put to sleep. Is what it's set to on lid closure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Power button is set to sleep. AMI sleep button is set to sleep.
Okay, there you go.
That's the way it should be.
Then that's the way it should be. But you're saying when you shut the lid, it's basically shutting off.
Yes, just like if I held on the power button.
Or it could be crashing, it sounds like then.
It does that. I checked to make sure nothing was pressing the button, like if something was actually pressing it. That's not happening. But also, if I go and shut down my computer, what's weird is it doesn't power down normally. It kind of goes on, the screen goes black, my keyboard stays lit, and I'll stay that way for like 20 minutes, and then I get a hard crash.
Yeah, but I noticed when you were reading off the settings to me, you said power button goes to sleep.
Right.
Instead of power button should be shut down.
Right.
Oh, it should be shut down, yeah. Oh, thank you.
Yep. So what's happening is the unit is failing to go to sleep, and there are several things that'll do that, that'll cause that. Drivers are more than likely what the cause is, but he's having, there's some software that is failing. So go to the Lenovo website and see if you could download the advanced chipset.
Try those out and see if they work, and then get back to us again through our Contact Us button on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. All right? Thank you very much. All right. Back with your questions, 800-859-0957. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor, our question and answer time. My name is Foster Brown, co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Kel Carson in studio. And Kel has a word to the wise in just a moment. I want to just quickly tell you folks something that has happened just recently. We finally got our podcast feed to iTunes fixed.
Woohoo!
Yes. Thank you to the folks at Visual VC Web Design.
Visual Compass.
Visual Compass, thank you. I've known them as VC Web Design for so long. It's Visual Compass. They are the folks, Vince Schmielewski and his crew out in Ypsilanti, have been helping us, and they got it working. So now, if you go to iTunes, you simply can go to the podcast, and you can look for the Internet Advisor podcast. And when you got it, you can then simply sign up for it, and you'll get not only this week's podcast with all the show notes and everything else, you'll also get past programs as well. It's really wonderful when it works. It's finally working again. Hey, Cal, before we get to our callers, and we have some folks calling in right now, and by the way, we got about another 25 minutes, 800-859-0957, to get to your question. You had something to tell us great of importance at this time of year.
You know, a lot of times I hear people say things like, you know, I had this telephone, and then I had a problem with it, and it stopped working, and then I took it in, and they told me they couldn't retrieve any of my information off of it, and they had to give me a new phone. And they always would curse the manufacturer, or they would curse it. And you know something? The bottom line is we're all responsible for our own data. And the way you be responsible for your data, or the best way to be responsible for it, is to make sure you back it up on a regular basis. And it doesn't matter how you do it, you just have to do it. Whether you back it up on an external hard drive, whether you use cloud services, whether you use the internet, whatever you use to do it, you need to back up your information. You need to back it up on a regular basis. Or, as I say, you back it up as regular as you can tolerate the loss.
Yeah.
So if you can go without a whole week's worth of information, then only back up once a week. If you can't go that long, you probably should back up more frequently. And nowadays with things like our tax returns that we all do using TurboTax or one of the many different products out there, it's important to make sure you back up those files because you never know when that hard drive is going to die. Absolutely. And one day the IRS is going to knock on your door and say, we'd like to do an audit. could you please reproduce those documents for us? And you go like, duh, I can't find it because my hard drive died.
Yeah.
And they'll say, that's fine. We'll just default to the maximum amount you have to pay.
So
you don't want to go down that type of path. And just all the other things that make up your digital lifestyle, the pictures from various events that you love and cherish, the songs, all those sort of things that go along with it. It's important on a regular basis to back up. And if you're not the type of person who remembers to do it all the time, or you're very, very busy like Gary Baker, get an online service where you back up automatically in the background on a regular basis. It's worth the few bucks you pay for.
Yep.
You know, and I, instead of just a service, I automatically back up to OneDrive, which is in the cloud. I don't store anything on my computer because as soon as I try to store it on any one computing device, I interoperate between three different devices, and I need to get to things from any of those three devices.
Right. And that's the value of something like OneDrive.
And OneDrive, it's always there, and they back it up. They back it up in three places. I never have to worry about it again once it's back.
And you were, Eddie was complaining a little bit about that.
Oh, I was going, why does the Microsoft OS want me to save to OneDrive? I want to save it to my, you know, existing hard
drive. Yeah, see. And
I'm just a creature of habit.
And you can always use other services. You can use Dropbox. You can use Mosey. Yes, there's tons of them out there.
Okay. Yeah, but OneDrive, it's a gig. And then if you want more, you ask them for more, and they give it to you.
Yeah.
For free?
Yeah.
For free.
That's so far I've asked, and that's what they've done. So
everything comes with a price.
Well, so, you know, I don't care as long as it's free to me.
Hey, we've got a caller who has some answers, which is kind of nice. Okay. Joe is with us from Livonia. Hi, Joe. How you doing?
Hi, guys.
Very good. You have some answers.
Well, I hope they're answers for Alex in regards to the problems that he's having.
Okay. Well, hey, go back and refresh me on that one. What was the problem with Alex?
Well, he had a whole bunch of them in terms of being able to get online and maybe having to upgrade his operating system to get a better choice of browsers.
Okay.
And if I remember correctly, with Google, you need to have an Intel-based system, and I'm not sure if it's 10.5 or 10.6, which is the bottom line that it will operate with.
And he did have the Intel system. That's what he told us.
Yeah, he had it. And he was running 10.5.
Right.
But, Cal, we were saying in the break, Cal, that you might have to go up to 10.6 for some
to
of those
Snow
changes.
Snow Leopard, right?
Snow Leopard.
Right, because he was saying that for $19, that's a no-brainer to upgrade from the next version. And
Leopard
all future upgrades after that are free, right?
Now, we're talking with Apple computers.
With the Apple computer.
After then upgrade, from then on, they charge nothing.
So after you go from Lion, then you go to Huntress, and then, you know, Cougar, and then
right,
50
then,
Shades of Grey.
Right, but then you're also going to have a possible problem in terms of what hardware is he running to start with as to whether or not he can even go to 10.6.
Well, when he went to the Apple store, they said that he could go to 10.6.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Right. All right. Now, in terms of alternate browsers, first of all, I have found that Firefox that will run on mine, which is 10.5, don't even waste your time with it. Yeah. But there are two others. There's something called OmniWeb. And it's through the www.omnigroup.com/OmniWeb.
OmniWeb, okay.
And it is version 5.11.2 and then version blah, 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 blah. And then there is a second one called SeaMonkey, which I believe they're both Mozilla takeoffs. And SeaMonkey is a version 2.0.14, and I wasn't able to come up to an address for that one.
Okay.
So has that worked well for you? Because I know most of the developers that I know, they don't test for those.
Well, what it is they're offshoot groups that have upgraded so that they'll be more functional with today's browser requirements.
So they actually report themselves as being a different version of Mozilla, as an example.
I believe they're both Mozilla. But I will warn him in terms of OmniGroup, it seems to me that if you've got a site that is heavily Flash, it doesn't seem to want to work very nicely.
Mm.
But with SeaMonkey, I don't seem to be having the same problems.
So there's almost 300 different browsers out there in some form or another. Many have not been kept up to date. And the reason that they haven't, and they haven't been big competitors, is because as developers, we just cannot test against every one of those browsers. So sometimes you'll go to a website, and a lot of websites, if as long as it's compatible enough, it'll work. But there'll be some sites that it just won't be compatible, and the developers don't even care because it's such a small fraction of the browser market.
Yeah.
They just can't do, I mean, it's just too long to try to take every change you ever make to your website and test it against
these
browsers.
That's what these are. These are special interest groups, if you will, that are offshoots that, because they are still running 10.5, 10.4, et cetera, they have made it their goal to sit there and try and keep these browsers functional with today's requirements.
You know, it's interesting.
And again, I understand that. It's the website developer that you got to get to.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the problem.
What you're saying. Yeah.
That's the problem.
You know, Joe, it's interesting. It's SeaMonkey. I never heard of it. It's a project, and it says here, under the hood, SeaMonkey uses much of the same Mozilla source code, which powers such successful siblings as Firefox and Thunderbird.
Right, but Firefox doesn't work with word diddly, if you will, with 10.5.
I've heard that there's been problems recently with Firefox in particular,
Well, the best thing is, if you're going to play mainstream internet, as I call it, then you have to use a mainstream browser. Mm-hmm. And that means you're going to either be on IE, Safari, or Chrome, or something like that.
As much as we'd like it not to be that way, that's the way it is.
Chrome won't work, like I said,
unless he's in 10.6.
Yeah.
And Intel.
Now, did you have another question for us, Joe, by the way?
No, that was just information for Alex.
Thank you. That's really helpful. I really appreciate that. Thanks so much, Joe.
Right, I'm sending the bill.
I love it.
And actually, we do like for when people can help us out. Joe brought up some good opportunities for us to talk about the different, because there are different browsers out there. Like I said, there's still, many of them are not kept up to date, but there's almost 300 different browsers.
Right, and I've only used 262 of them, so there's at least 44 of them out there I still have to try.
But you're probably going to go to the big four.
I'm curious, just among us, what browser you normally use?
I use IE at work because we have internal systems that only work with IE.
Internet Explorer.
And then I've been working a lot with Chrome lately, although I have Firefox and I use, on my Apple products, I use Safari.
Ed?
Internet Explorer and Chrome.
Okay.
I always stick with the manufacturer. If I'm on Apple, it's Safari. If I'm on Windows, I use IE.
Yep. And I'm on an Apple base. I use Chrome quite a bit and then Safari. And I kind of go between them depending on what issues I have. Right. But, it's interesting. Chrome is something I think we all know about.
I've been using it more and more.
We got the last time for you to give us a call, 800-859-0957. Give us a ring right now. We'll try to help you. Thank you so much for being with us here. And my sincere thanks on this Valentine's Day to Gary Baker, Edward Dell, and Cal Carson for being with me in studio here for these 3 hours. We got some more folks calling in right now. We'll be with Kurt from Fenton in just a moment. But thank you, folks. By the way, our homepage, internetadvisor.net, is the place that you go for all the information you will hear from this program on Sunday night. I post the podcast, and we break it down by hour, so you can listen to or download portions of it or listen to the entire podcast during the rest of the week.
He said thank you to you, Ed. Did he give you flowers and candy?
It's a long trip home. Hey, by the way, guys, I asked before about the five top industries to be impacted by drones. And this is according to an article in CNET. From number five, it was journalism. Think of all the things that have been impacted by now the ability to fly over sites and to really get the eyes on.
In that case, can I guess one?
Okay, go ahead.
Real estate?
That would be, yes, part of it.
Okay.
Yep, yeah. And mapping would be number four. And mapping could be real estate. It could be any number of different things. Like they had a construction project that's going on, and you can actually watch at a distance. You could be anywhere in the world and watch that construction site go up.
Well, and we had a company called Lunatic come in that was working, had a contract with Google and the Small Business Association of Michigan, and they were working in Michigan to map not only exterior, But they were flying drones in large buildings.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Which is amazing. Yep.
Number three was transportation for things. For instance, I didn't know this. The military is using drones now, huge drones. They can carry up to 6,000 pounds, and they're delivering supplies to troops.
Well, we have autonomous vehicles on the horizon.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for my autonomous drone. If they can keep my car separated from other cars and not get in an accident, Send the drone to pick me up and take me to work.
Send in the clowns? No, send in the drone, yeah. Number two is law enforcement, of course, when there are hostile situations. But what do you think the number one is?
Pizza delivery.
Agriculture for farming. Because you can look down on, let's say, a part of soil to tell the water that's there or on any number of different things.
Would they use the drone for crop dusting?
I would think it would be. Why not, right? Yeah. That would be the right thing to do.
That'd be great. That sucker just...
Well, but the point of better.
The issue
can
is...
Can you imagine that?
Drones are working, and they're doing a lot of heavy lifting right now.
Yeah, but can you imagine not having to do crop dusting? Because you spend a lot of time outside of...
Why
the,
not?
Not yeah. being over the field. Well, if you could lay down what you need to
yep.
and not make that big loop to come back again, if you could just stop.
It could put the control into the individual farmer, and he could
on the ground.
Standing on the ground, hovering 50 foot above the ground. And
he wouldn't even have to do that. He could just GPS his location of his land right there, hit the button, thing goes up and drops it.
Yep, honey, let's go out to dinner. And while we're gone, the drone's going to fertilize our garden.
Oh, I love it. It's fascinating. Okay, let's get to Kurt from Fenton.
I hadn't thought of it, but that's wonderful.
Hi, Kurt. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Thank you for taking my call. This is a call about a home cell phone repeater amplifier network that I purchased from, can I say who it is?
Sure.
It's Wilson Electronics. They sell it yet. So I'm a Verizon Wireless customer. I've had fringe service since moving to this area in Fenton.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the backside of a hill. It has to do with topography to the nearest Verizon cell site. My question is, how do I find the location of my nearest Verizon tower? Basically, I installed the system, have consulted with their tech support from Wilson, and they've been pretty good. The four-band amplifier repeater I bought has indicator lights that will indicate feedback loops, which cause the amplifier to reduce power output. Had a lot of trouble with the... So I have a inside amplifier repeater connected with LMR 400 coax cable going to an external Yagi antenna pointed to the nearest Verizon site.
Well, that sounds really complicated. Last time I hooked one of these things up, it was a Sprint, but I've done Verizon in the past, and the thing had integrated GPS.
Right.
I plugged it into the router, and I had a phone, and it discovered everything, and within 20 minutes, I had everything set up. But the Sprint was free. The Verizon was not. I think it was $170. I had to pay for that, or the customer paid for that.
No, you don't have to pay for it. You never, ever have to pay for those rascals.
Yes, and Kel went through this. Tell him that story.
What you need to do is you need to call Verizon up and say, look, guys, I'm paying for service for you. I can't get it at my house. I need something to boost that signal to me. I need to know where that tower is and everything, and I want you to send me the equipment to do it.
And
if they say they're going to charge you, you say no. You need to send it to me for free because you are obligated to do such.
Yep.
I don't think they're obligated, but they want your service.
I've
done the same thing.
Verizon 10 times, and it's a known fringe area. It was a real battle.
So they're playing hardball.
So eventually I just went out and purchased this equipment. Now I'm having trouble. I think what's happened is that AT&T has installed a nearby tower that is on 800 megahertz, and I'm on 850 with Verizon, and I believe it's causing interference. Do you know anybody who installs these systems where I can get a tech, band to come out and troubleshoot my system?
I could tell you what to do in this case.
Okay.
Switch to AT&T.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah,
well,
excellent.
It does make sense. Why would you buy service that can't be delivered to you when you could get service from someone who can deliver it to you?
There's a huge battle right now between AT&T and Verizon. Verizon's just changed their entire price model to match what T-Mobile and what AT&T is doing. You might want to call them and just to see how that would benefit to do free switchover. I mean, unless there's a legitimate reason why you need to stay with Verizon. But if they're not providing, they'll get the message if enough customers leave in the Fenton area.
I went to AT&T. I had the same problem with my wife's phone. My kid's phone worked fine in our house. My wife's phone didn't. She took it back to AT&T a couple times. They gave her new ones. And it still didn't work. So I went back and I said, I need a microcell. And they said, it's going to be $100.
Right.
And I said, I'm going to switch to Verizon. They said, here's your microcell. And they handed it to me. I plugged it in, had the same experience with Ed. It found it. And it was just really easy.
Right. It really easy. So if you got this Wilson one, you might want, I don't know how much you invested, take it back and call them. And you, for, I thought it was 170. I was mistaken.
This
but 101
100.
Bucks. Yeah.
So it might have been different time.
And Gary's right. They're not obligated to give it to you. But as a customer, if you're insistent enough and pleasant, you know, you don't have to call them nasty names. But if you're insistent and pleasant, they should give it to you for nothing.
You know, when you think about what I pay per month for
phones. Yes.
Yeah.
The $100 was easy. You know, it was an easy decision for them to make.
Not to mention the fact you just say, you know, I'm going to start streaming more movies on a regular basis, so you're going to get more bandwidth. You're going to get more revenue from me. So, hey, why can't I get the box?
The bottom line is you are not providing the service to me that you have said, and I've got to go someplace else so I can get that, period. So don't hang on with lousy service, Kurt, or buying all this fancy equipment, it sounds like, is...
I'd take it back like Gary said. Gary said, and I'd make Verizon give me the equipment I need.
Yep, or switch to AT&T.
Or switch to AT&T. I'm sorry to make it kind of simplistic on that, Ray.
AT&T has been just a little bit farther ahead than Verizon at changing to the new plan.
And T-Mobile would love your business.
I was just going to say that, too.
Well, Kurt, thank you. Hey, Kurt, we're right at the end of the program. If you want to continue the dialogue, please go to internetadvisor.net and put an email to us through the Contact Us button.
And we'd be happy to continue.
Yeah, we'd be happy to continue that conversation. And Don from Ortonville, we're not going to have time to take your call online.
Hang on.
We're going to put you on hold, and we'll try to talk to you after the program. For the rest of you folks out there, thank you so much for being with us during this extended program. It's been a delight. My name is Foster Brown. Gary Baker, my co-host, along with Ed Rudell and Cal Carson and all the guys behind the glass, we thank you as well. Don't forget, on Sunday night, the podcast will be available to you. Simply go to internetadvisor.net and you'll find our show notes and the breakdown of the program. Or you can go to iTunes and sign up for our podcast delivered to you every week through iTunes. On behalf of all of us here, have a great Valentine's Day and enjoy and stay warm.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.